listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of the Miles to Go podcast. We've got a full show today. We're going to take the show off the rails again just a little bit because we're still trying to digest all the Marriott Starwood news. As we get a little bit deeper into the program, we'll have somebody on who's a pretty good expert on the Qantas program to give us some details about that and why he ultimately switched to the American Airlines program as his base program. We'll have Jen back for a big deal segment, but we start out with my friend Summer again from Mommy Points because she's been chewing on the Marriott Starwood announcement a little bit harder than I have lately, and she's got some great posts out about the ways to optimize for the new program. Hey, Summer, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me back.
So, you know, first blush, I'd say, and I don't want to guide you on this, but my first opinion was, you know, wow, this announcement wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's, I think, 99% of people, myself included. That's the takeaway. It has to be the takeaway. They're a huge program. So they've got to meet the needs of millions and millions of people and thousands of properties. And they could have pretty much done that in a much more damaging way for their loyal customers than they did. So, yeah, I think the takeaway has to be it's not that bad. It's not perfect, but it could have been so much worse.
Yeah, no, it really could have been. I mean, you know, there definitely are things I'm not wild about in the program, but, you know, but I think overall, I think it's workable. I think there are ways to take advantage of it. And I know you've been looking into the credit card side of things, which, you know, is changing drastically. And you may have found a couple of ways early on to optimize with credit cards and how you would use them in the new program.
Yeah. So I think the credit card strategy is going to be shifting pretty dramatically in this new program. As it stood, historically, the SPG Amex was one of the best cards for everyday non-bonus spending because SPG points were so insanely valuable. So sure, you were only earning one per dollar outside of your hotel stays or some targeted promos. But, you know, when you were racking those up, paying big doctor bills or car insurance or tax bills or whatever it was, then in the current system, if you wanted to, you could turn that one SPG point into three Marriott points. And the Marriott chart topped out at 45,000 points a night. So it wasn't that hard to get a lot of points in a hurry. But starting on August 1st, those SPG Amex cards are going to only earn 2 points per dollar, which is a drop because if you remember, one SPG point becomes three. So now you're earning a third less, basically, yeah. Even though it sounds like more, it's less in the new program.
Marketing.
So they will not be as strong for everyday spending, but they're going to get infinitely better for the folks who don't put a lot of spending on them because you're going to start getting these valuable anniversary nights beginning in August.
Yeah, and I haven't dug too much into them. So have they given us a lot of details on how you can use those anniversary nights?
So they've given us a peek. I think we're still a few weeks, maybe a month away from getting the award chart listing where all the properties fall. I mean, we know what the award chart's going to look like in terms of the category pricing, but we don't know where all the properties will fall. So the co-branded cards that cost $95 a year, like the SPG Amex cards, the new Marriott card they're releasing next week, those are going to give you an anniversary night you can use at properties up to 35,000 points a night. And I'll list what some of those are in a second, but the other credit card that's coming out in August is like a luxury SPG Amex, yeah. And it's going to have a massive $450 annual fee, but it's going to give you an anniversary night that's valid at properties up to 50,000 points a night, which is pretty high up there on their award chart. It's not at the top tier, but you're going to have some Ritz-Carltons and some St. Regis properties that you're going to be able to use that anniversary night for. So yesterday,
that card also comes with a $300 credit to spend at properties, right?
Yeah, it has a lot of perks in addition to the anniversary night. Yeah, so it does. It has a $300 credit you can use on property, as well as like, you know, the priority pass and TSA PreCheck global entry application fees. A lot of those same perks you probably have seen on other cards with similar annual fees. But yeah, the $300 statement credit per year on property will help significantly diminish the pain of the $450 annual fee, assuming you spend time and money at SPG and Marriott properties.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, for folks who might not be, you know, who hear us say a car with an annual fee of $450, don't get scared away right away, because you might be able to chop that by 2/3 just by using the on-site credit.
Oh, totally. And then when you start looking at which properties you can use that anniversary night at versus the $95 per year cards, it may be even more worth it.
Yeah.
Although I think the real play for most people is going to potentially be to have a couple of these cards within your family, because sure, you can spend one night at one of these properties with your anniversary night, but if you only have one card, like, how are you paying for your other night or two or three or four, however long you want to stay? But if you have one or two of these co-branded cards and your partner has one or two of these co-branded cards and you're getting an anniversary night on each one of them each year, well, all of a sudden you can put together at least a long weekend, which is a lot different than just having one night of your trip covered. So they've given us a peek into where about 100 properties will fall on the award chart. And I won't read all of them, but in the post that'll be linked, there is a listing of a bunch of them. But just to give you a flavor, the 35,000 point per night threshold is going to include the Westin in Puerto Vallarta, the Westin in Cozumel, the JW Marriott Mexico City, a Sheraton in Bali, the W Mexico City, and let's see, some Le Meridians in Paris. So there's a sprinkling of places you actually would want to stay at 35,000 points a night. It's really not bad. And that's just on, like, the tiny sneak peek they've given us of 100 properties of their 6,000 or whatever they have in their stable. So the 50,000 point per night, the sneak they've given us is the Ritz-Carlton in Cancun, St. Regis Mexico City, Ritz-Carlton Bali, the Westin in Times Square or Grand Central in New York City, and then a handful of properties in Paris. The Renaissance Paris Vendome is one of them. So again, like, now you're looking at properties that are easily selling for $200-$300, even more during peak season. So yeah, you've got a $450 annual fee, but you add the value of the anniversary night to the value of the statement credits, and depending on how you use it, it's going to more than pay for itself for some travelers.
Yeah, I would say those Paris properties are definitely going to, break the bank in any of the sort of, you know, other than like the coldest times of year in Paris. I remember looking at some of those hotels the last time I went to Paris, and they were easily $300-$400 a night in the summertime, and definitely higher at other times. I did notice that, at least I thought I saw in the announcement, that maybe that Westin Grand Central is dropping in category, which surprised me. Because it's a decent property, well located, rooms are fairly new, and usually pretty full. So I was surprised to see that one getting cheaper, but in terms of number of points, category, but it's still one of those properties that, you know, traditionally when I go to New York, it's going to be at least $250-$300 a night.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's going from the current equivalent of about 20,000 SPG points a night to 50,000 in the new property. If it had stayed the same, it'd be 60,000 in the new chart. But so it's going down the equivalent of 10,000 points a night in the new program.
Yeah, my head's still spinning on trying to calculate all the math on the 1-to-3 ratio in the new category. Divide by 7 and add the carry of the 1. And well,
I know. It is a little confusing. But the bottom line, I think, for the sneak peek they gave us is, yeah, some properties are going crazy. So like the Westin Grand Cayman that I love, is going from the equivalent of 36,000 points per night in the new program up to 60,000 points per night. So not everything is good news. There are, you know, bad news sprinkled all around the good news, but it's not an overall gutting of the chart, and you're going to be left with these annual certificates that you can only use at the Sheraton Kansas City Airport. Like, it's not like that at all. There's going to be a number of really good properties just based on the sneak they've given us so far.
Yeah, I tend to think that there are probably going to be a lot more going up than going down. But I do think that, like you said, I do think that if we're value hunters, which we are, that there will be pockets of value to find here and there.
Totally. And the strategy shifts. You know, you probably, like I mentioned, and your family are going to want a few of these cards that give you the anniversary night if you really want to maximize them. Because otherwise, one random night that you can use somewhere is awesome, but it's not nearly as awesome as if you have two or three or four of them to play with.
Yeah, I agree. Awesome. Well, there's tons more to digest, about the new program. So I'm sure we'll have you back on as we dig in deeper. Summer, thanks again for being on. Can you tell folks where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me. I blog daily at mommypoints.com, M-O-M-M-Y points, or I'm on Twitter at @mommy_points.
Awesome. And you'll find Summer and I both this week, right after the episode comes out, at the Freddie Awards, hearing who's the best in hotel and airline loyalty. See you there,
Summer.
And we
get to wear fancy clothes, so I can't wait to see you there.
All right, take care. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
This episode of Miles to Go is sponsored by Gogo In-Flight Internet. Gogo brings the internet to the sky, so planes fly smarter, airlines perform better, and passengers travel happier. Their new blazing fast 2KU antenna delivers industry-leading speeds, up to 15 megabits per passenger device, and is currently available on over 400 planes flying in over 65 countries worldwide. Get Gogo, travel happier.
And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. So we're 7 episodes in, well, I guess officially 8 when we count this one, and we started looking at the analytics for the podcast, and we want to make sure that we're, providing content that's relevant to people. And so, we started with what we thought was relevant, and then we started looking at the analytics. And one of the interesting things that popped up was that one of the top countries by percentage that are downloading and listening to the podcast are folks from Australia. So it seemed relevant for us to make sure that we had some good content about Qantas. And that's why I asked on a good friend of mine, Dave Feldman, from Catch It Loyalty. Hey, Dave, how you doing today?
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And so the reason why we brought Dave on is twofold. First off, Dave has been a longtime loyal Qantas customer. He's also an American Airlines top-tier executive platinum member. And so we're going to get a chance to talk about both programs and also why he switched from Qantas to American. And the other thing about Dave that's interesting here specifically is, his bread and butter, if you will, where he makes his money is consulting to the airline and hotel programs, the loyalty side of things. So he's got a great perspective. Dave and I have spoken at conferences together in the past, and I thought it'd be great to have him on to talk first about Qantas, which we're going to do today. And then we're going to have him back next week to say, hey, know you were a Qantas guy and you switched to American. Let's talk through why. So, Dave, that's a whole big setup for what we're going to talk about today. And, I guess let's start with, I think when we were prepping the segment, you had told me you do have lifetime status with Qantas. How long were you loyal to Qantas for?
Sure. Thanks, Ed. Look, I think I joined the Qantas program in the late 90s, off the top of my head. I initially started my adult frequent flying life with Ansett, who our Australian listeners would, perhaps depending on their age, would remember. But it went bust back in 2001. And with that, we lost our only Star Alliance carrier as well. So Basically, there was a huge outflow of people that were Ansett people that all of a sudden had signed up for Qantas frequent flyer. And I think I was already a member because my workplace at the time had some deal with bonus Qantas points, but it wasn't my primary program. And honestly, ever since then, traveling between Australia and the US ever since 99, I think, mostly on a yearly basis, it's really been a Qantas and American Airlines, One World Alliance kind of relationship for me.
Sure. So at one point you were Platinum One, which is Qantas's top tier. And I certainly don't know a lot about the loyalty program. I'll be perfectly honest. There's a bunch of programs I do know, but I don't know much about that one. Can you talk generally speaking about the sort of benefits that you got as a Platinum One and how that might compare to what folks might get from the U.S. programs?
Sure. Look, probably maybe Ed, I might take a quick moment just to kind of give a broad overview of what the Qantas program looks like. Obviously, Australian members will probably listeners will be familiar with that. But, all of our friends in the U.S., it's a very foreign concept. And especially how you actually earn elite status is different in Australia as well, particularly with Qantas. So firstly, what you've got, and maybe I'll do it in a comparison to your typical American or United or Delta member, how they would relate to it. So you have there's four main status levels with Qantas. Not including your base level. Right. But you have your first elite level is silver. So that would be the equivalent of American Advantage Gold. Your second level would be Qantas Gold. That's One World Sapphire. So that would be the equivalent of American Platinum. Then you have Qantas Platinum, which is One World Emerald. So the equivalent of American Executive Platinum. And then you have Platinum One. And Platinum One's a relatively new status level. It was only brought in about off the top of my head. I think it's only about 6 years old now. And to qualify for Platinum One, it's basically triple the qualification of Platinum. So the easiest analogy to use is if you're an American Executive Platinum, imagine having to fly three times that amount in order to qualify for Platinum One. So the other thing that's really probably important to note is the way you qualify for status in Australia, with Virgin Australia and Qantas, but we'll just talk about Qantas mainly here, is a concept called status credits. And if any of your listeners are familiar with the British Airways tier point system, it's very similar to that. And that basically is you earn status credits based on, number one, how far you fly, and also the fare class or the cabin that you're in. And now Qantas changed up their system a few years ago. They jokingly called it something called Simpler and Fairer, but ended up actually making it one of the world's most complicated systems. But essentially, it still works the same way. And that is, the further you fly and the higher the cabin you're in, the more status credits you will earn. But it's not simply, it's not as easy as going, well, I flew exactly 1,205 miles, therefore it's 1,205 miles times X. It doesn't quite work like that. There's zones and tables and all that kind of business. But the reality is, if you fly regularly in business or first class, you're going to achieve status a lot faster. So you could almost say it's always been revenue based in that sense, even though technically there's not a calculation that directly ties to the dollar amount you spend. So that's probably a way to think about it. Now, with Platinum One, one of the interesting quirks about qualifying it is, and this is particularly relevant for your non-Australian listeners, and that is, to qualify, you actually need to earn 3,600 status credits, of which 2,700 of those have to actually be earned on Qantas-coded flights.
So 75% of your travel has to be on a Qantas code. Interesting.
Exactly. So what you couldn't do, for example, is just fly domestically in the US and American Airlines and just credit all your travel to Qantas and earn Qantas Platinum One. You could earn Qantas Platinum doing that, but you couldn't, as long as you flew your minimum four segments on Qantas, but you couldn't earn Qantas Platinum One. So you really do need to spend, as you say, 75% of your travel on Qantas code. So that's an interesting one there.
I don't have a real problem with that, though. I mean, if this is going to be the top level, and it's going to be the folks that they recognize the most with the most specific and rewarding benefits, then those folks should be on their medal.
Look, absolutely. And the reality is this as well, is if you're not predominantly flying on Qantas most of the time, you're also not going to actually realize any benefits of Platinum One, to be honest with you. So most of the benefits are what I would call soft benefits. Now, obviously, you can go to Qantas.com and you can, look at all the big marketing list of benefits that Platinum One has over Platinum. But in reality, it's One World Emerald, the same as regular Platinum. So that means, that means obviously first class check-in, first class lounge access around the world, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing, or the main difference between it really, is the level of support and recognition you get. So when things go wrong, as a Qantas Platinum One, you have access to something called the Special Service Team. And it's basically a hotline, a phone, email, et cetera. Qantas marketed it when it was first came out that they would proactively be monitoring your flights and, reaccommodating disruptions and things like that. But like most of the airlines that promise this kind of service, it's a little bit hit and miss. But the reality is that when things go wrong as a Qantas Platinum One, you will absolutely be looked after much quicker and much better than a regular run-of-the-mill Platinum. And when it comes to upgrades, you're in a higher priority on the upgrade list. And it's probably worth mentioning at that point, Ed, as well, just that we mention upgrades, that upgrades work very differently on Qantas than they do in America with the U.S. airlines. There is no such thing as, unlimited complimentary upgrades on domestic flights. You travel domestically in Australia. If you want to travel in the business class cabin, guess what? You need to use points or cash to either buy that business class fare or upgrade into that. There's no free upgrades there. That said, Qantas Platinum One, most Platinum One members, you know, will occasionally randomly get an upgraded segment with a little message on the boarding pass saying, you know, enjoy your flight from the Platinum One team. But that's not something you should expect or count on at any point in time. But for international upgrades with Qantas, and, you know, if you think about it, say you're flying from, you know, Los Angeles to Sydney, you know, it's a 12 to 14 hour flight. And that's the type of flight that you really want an upgrade on. And Qantas has a wait list, or an upgrade list, if you will, for international upgrades. And those are prioritized by elite status order. So obviously, if you're a Platinum One in economy wanting to upgrade to business, or maybe you're in the business cabin, you want to upgrade to first, a Platinum One is going to get that upgrade on a much higher position on the list than a regular Platinum is. So, you know, those benefits really paint the picture that to get the most value out of Platinum One, you actually need to be flying Qantas in order to realize those benefits. If you're flying American Airlines as a Qantas Platinum One member, you get treated exactly the same as any other oneworld emerald. So there's no advantage, pardon the pun, in being a Platinum One over a Platinum if you're flying on a oneworld partner. Yeah.
So just out of curiosity, in the time that you were Platinum One, how often do you think you'd see an international upgrade clear for a long-haul flight?
Look, I've got to be honest. I've been very, very, very lucky over the years. I think it was in 2004 that Qantas changed their international upgrade system. It used to be that you could confirm upgrades ahead of time, and then it was always waitlisted after that. And even when I had no status with Qantas, and a base level is called bronze with Qantas, I've got to say every single upgrade request I put in always cleared. I had a brilliant run. Now, that's unheard of nowadays, you know. And, you know, I'm going back probably, you know, 10, 15 years with those anecdotes there. So I was always very lucky. And, you know, for the last 10 years or so, I've always had status. So I can't – it'd be unfair of me to try to comment on the bronze member experience nowadays. But anecdotally, you know, it is tough, particularly on the U.S. flights. Sure. Because it's obviously everybody wants to be lying flat for those flights if they can. But look, probably the as a Platinum One, I did get a couple of operational upgrades on international flights. A couple of those were just between Australia and New Zealand, we're talking 3-hour flights on a 737, so it's really a domestic flight if you ask me. But I did get one between Los Angeles and Melbourne. Where I was in premium economy and got the red beep at the gate upon boarding, and in business class on the way home. So that was very much appreciated. Late at night, 11:30 at night or whatever it was, flying all the way to Melbourne. But look, I think one of the best areas of support I had from Platinum One was I was actually traveling to the US. I think it was from Melbourne to LA, and with a colleague who only had gold status at the time. They'd flown down from Sydney and actually left the camera at the security screening. You know, very nice, expensive, you know, SLR-type camera. I had left at the security screening. So we're having breakfast in the first lounge in Melbourne, the Qantas lounge. And it literally picked up my phone, emailed the special service team, told them the story. Before we even got on the flight, they'd emailed back to say that they'd located the camera. They were holding it in the lost property storage. Here's the reference number, so my colleague could collect it when he got back to Sydney at the end of the trip. So
that's great.
You know, little things like that, I've got to say, when I no longer held Platinum One and I didn't have access to those things, I didn't really miss the status a lot. But the reality is yeah, those little things made your travel experience a little bit nicer. The wheels were greased, so to speak.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's unique just to Qantas. I can think back in the day, as you know, for many years I was a diehard American Airlines guy, and they still have a soft spot in my heart for them. Based on the sameness of the programs, I've focused a bit more of my travel on United so I can be home more for the family. But I can remember, it's probably 7 or 8 years ago now. It was well before the merger. It was Denver. I left a brand new pair of Bose Quiet Comfort headphones on a plane, and I managed to get a hold of somebody in the Admirals Club, and they went down to the plane and grabbed the headphones and then held them for me for 3 weeks until I was back in Denver again. And, you know, as executive platinum, those were the sorts of things that made me feel great about the airline. Like you say, it's a soft benefit. I'm not going to find that listed anywhere, but it was great. It was a great brand recognition by them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think on that note, Ed, I think that really is the badge of honor of a frequent flyer. You know, you're not really a frequent flyer until you've left a pair of Bose headphones on a plane at some point.
I think
that's a key criteria.
Yeah, I think it is. So I definitely want to cover your transition to American, and that's why I want to have you back next week. Before we run out of time here, can you tell people where they can find you?
Sure, Ed. I write a lot about the industry and about programs, more from the program side of the equation and customer experience. But they either go to my website, catchatloyalty.com, and probably that's the easiest. But what I'd usually say to people is to click through to LinkedIn from there, which is usually where I publish most of the more interesting stuff.
Sounds great. Dave, thanks so much for being with us. We'll have you back again next week, and we'll talk about why you're more of an American Airlines flyer now than Qantas.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
And guys, we'll be back in just a minute on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. I've got Jen back with me for another It's a Big Deal segment. And we're talking Southwest today, one of her favorite subjects. How you doing, Jen?
I'm doing well, thanks, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, in our world, double points promotions are really the hallmark of the best of the best. You know, triple point promos come out once in a blue moon, but double points promos a couple times a year. And you wrote recently about the double points promo on Southwest.
Absolutely. So this is a promotion that comes out probably twice a year, I'd say. So I'm glad to see it return. Although it seems like it's been a really long time since Southwest has had any promotions that was catered towards everyone. So this is pretty good. So with this particular promotion, it's kind of has a few caveats to it, but it's essentially for travel between April 3rd and June 13th. So all your paid flights on Southwest, not using your points, you'll earn double points. And the one huge stipulation to this, which always bothers me with Southwest, they always do it. It's not unusual for them, is that you actually have to book during that time frame as well. So if you have flights that were booked previously, even right before the promotion was launched, you're not eligible. And that really bothers me, but it is what it is. So you have to actually register by, book by, and travel by within those April 3rd to June 13th dates.
Yeah, and I think, I get your point. I think if it was, hey, book a flight in the next few months for flight, either in that time period or later in the year, that would be a little bit easier. But most of us already have the business travel portion of our stuff taken care of. And certainly for those that are Uber planners like you and Summer from Mommy Points, you've got a bunch of your leisure stuff booked as well.
Right. Now, the one thing I always tell people, though, is if with Southwest, the great thing about them is that you can always cancel your flight, no fee, doesn't matter who you are, you don't need to have status, and then you can rebook. So if your flight has not increased in the cost, you can actually just cancel your flight and rebook it, and as long as you have a new reservation number, that will make you eligible for the promotion. You can't simply just change your flight. You actually need to cancel and rebook. So that's one little loophole there if the price did not go up.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, for folks, if the reservation has gone up but only by a little bit, and again, each to their own, how many points you're willing to spend. But since Southwest Rapid Rewards is a revenue-based program, you're essentially getting cash off of your next flight. And so double points, you could calculate what those are worth to you. And if the reservation had only gone up a couple of dollars or it stayed the same, like Jen said, then, it would totally be worth it to cancel a reservation and rebook it. You want to make sure you register for the promo first, but register for the promo and then rebook it.
Absolutely. And the way you register for the promotion, so unlike some other promotions you might be eligible for where you go to a central promotion page, you actually need to go into your Southwest account first and go to the promotions area and then register. So there's not some Southwest page where you then enter in your Rapid Rewards number. So make sure to always go into your account and register from there. This one seems to be widely available. It does not seem to be targeted like some of the other ones, so you should see it. But I obviously have not checked every single person's account, so hopefully you will see it in there.
Yeah, it's good to see some nationwide stuff. Like you said, they had all the California stuff last year when they were trying to compete with Alaska. And, you know, we'll have a link to your post in the show notes for folks who aren't exactly sure where to find the promotions section on their Rapid Rewards account. And I think, you know, let's close with one last tip here, which is even if you don't have something booked on Southwest right now, if you think you might have some travel, just go ahead and register for a promotion. It's free to do. It's quick. And you don't want to be stuck later going, gosh, I wish I'd remembered to register for that promo and I missed out on double points.
Yeah, absolutely. I always recommend that for everything.
Great. Well, Jen, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me at dealswelike.com, and you can also find me on Twitter at dealswelike as well. So thanks so much, Ed.
Thanks, Jen. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. As we wrap up episode 10 of the Miles to Go podcast, I wanted to start off the final two pennies with something a little bit funny. You know, when Summer and I started recording our first segment, she was listening to me and she wasn't commenting much when we were laying down the track for the episode. And then she told me that I sounded a bit like a chipmunk. And so I needed to record myself to see if I really did sound that way. And here's a quick funny outtake of Summer and I trying to figure out if there's really something wrong with me.
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild.
Okay, I guess I should talk regular for at least a little bit to see if there's a difference.
At first I was like, something's wrong with Ed, and then I realized, like, no, that's not possible.
No, there's
something's wrong with the way it's coming through. There's definitely something wrong with Ed.
Anyway, I hope you got a good chuckle out of that. I sure did. Seems a little bit weird to turn from that to something more somber, but... You know, I was thinking about how I wanted to close the episode today, and I've been thinking, you know, quite a bit about Southwest Airlines Flight 1380 and the passenger fatality from the engine explosion. I wrote about it again earlier this week based on an article by Scott McCartney in the Wall Street Journal detailing how the airline's been handling it. And, you know, I'd love to say that I'm going to get this exactly right, but this is off the cuff without a script, and I'm just, you know, trying to put in words, you know, how I'm feeling about it. It's the first passenger fatality in quite some time in the U.S., but not in the world on an airplane. And so we've seen these things, but this one's very close to home. And, you know, as I've written about earlier, it certainly could have been a lot worse. But I think about all the people that were associated with that flight, not just the passenger that so tragically lost their life, but the people that were around that passenger when it happened, the crew that had to react to those situations and then, you know, go on to continue working on flights, the people that maybe were nervous flyers and, you know, had that traumatic experience in the air and now have to think about getting back on an airplane. You know, I take air travel for granted. It's something I do very frequently. I think of it as just another method of transportation. It's an incredibly safe method of transportation, but there are risks. And I think about my family at times like that. And I think about the entire Southwest family, that's dealing with this tragic loss. It's a sobering reminder of the envelope that we push with airplanes and with technology as a whole. You know, I hope that there are things that we'll learn from the accident that make air travel even safer. And I sure hope that the folks that are coping with the tragedy that was Flight 1380 find the right way to cope with it and that they're not afraid to get back on an airplane and continue to travel and see the world and expand their horizons. I really do believe travel leads to so many positive things for us, for our kids. It's definitely been a big positive in my life. That's a full wrap for episode 10. It's hard to believe we're already 10 episodes in to the Miles to Go podcast, but I'm having a great time recording these. I hope you're enjoying it as well. And if you are, I'd ask you for two favors. I'd ask you to subscribe to the podcast, whether that's on iTunes or Google Play or SoundCloud or Stitcher. I'd ask you to give us a nice rating or leave a comment if there's something that you don't like, but give us some feedback. You know, doing those things helps us move that podcast up the rankings and expose it to more people. And that's what we want. We want more people to listen. I've been very thankful to the folks at GoGo InFlight Internet for sponsoring our first chunk of episodes. They've been great supporters since the day we launched. I'm thrilled to have them as part of the family here.
It's been fun getting to episode 10. Like I said, it doesn't seem like we're already there, but we are. And here we are 10 weeks later, or, you know, 9 weeks later, putting episode 10 in the books. I can't wait to get to episode 20, and then hopefully in the future to get to episode 100. And I hope you're still with me when we get there. Until then, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, we've got miles to go.